Okay, good morning. The Operations and Customer Service Committee meeting will now begin. For the record, this is a virtual meeting and all board members and participants are by telephone. For the record, I will now take roll call. Board Member Fulton?
Here.
Board Member Gordon?
Here.
Board Member Rasmussen?
Here.
Board Member Caulfield?
Here.
And Board Member Greaves is absent at today's meeting. Board members, at this time, we will ask for public comments on the agenda. Each speaker will have 2 minutes to provide comments. The first speaker is Joseph Clift. Is he on the line?
He is not connected.
Okay, we'll move on to the first staff report, which is the Operations and Customer Service Update, Stuart Mader.
Thank you, Joyce. Good morning, everyone. This is the Operations and Customer Service Report with Trends Analysis and Insight for March 2020. Rail on-time performance was 94.6% in March 2020, an increase of 1.4 percentage points versus February, and a year-over-year increase of 1.2 percentage points. Contributing factors to on-time performance included the first day of a switch to a modified schedule in response to COVID-19, a grade crossing accident on March 9th, and delays due to a catenary issue in the south tube of the Hudson River Tunnel on March 13th. New York Penn Station trains reported overall on-time performance of 92% in March, a 1.7% increase from February, and a year-over-year increase of 0.6 of a percentage point. Hoboken Terminal trains reported an overall on-time performance of 97% in March, a 1.2 percentage point increase from February, and a year-over-year increase of 4.5 percentage points. System-wide trains reported increases in peak and off-peak services from February to March. Peak on-time performance increased by 2.4 percentage points. Year-over-year, system-wide on-time performance increased for all three, peak, off-peak, and weekend services. Peak service improved by 1.1 percentage points year-over-year, from 90.3% in March 2019 to 91.4% in March 2020. Rail equipment reliability, measured as overall mean distance between failures, improved from 86,792 miles in February to 88,881 miles in March. This is the seventh consecutive month of improvement, as well as a dramatic year-over-year improvement of 21% versus March 2019 and 22% improvement since January of 2019. Bus on-time performance was 95.9% in March, an increase of 0.6 of a percentage point versus February. The 12-month rolling average for bus on-time performance was up by 1.6 percentage points year-over-year to 92.3%. The majority of customer feedback centered on scheduled service, vehicle interior condition, and employee performance. Port Authority bus terminal routes experienced minor delays caused by weather, traffic, and road construction detours, and a detour on Orient Way in Rutherford for a bridge replacement project caused delays in scheduled service on Route 190. Vehicle interior condition feedback largely centered on the seats blocked off near bus operators to support safe distancing and requests for more buses after the switch to a modified schedule in response to COVID-19. Bus operations closely monitored ridership and added trips to specific routes and times of day as needed. Employee performance feedback in all three divisions was investigated and the appropriate corrective actions taken, including supervisors monitoring routes and issues addressed with operators. On-time performance improved for all five major terminals in March. For the 13th month, Hoboken Terminal's year-over-year on-time performance went up significantly by 5.2 percentage points from 92.8% to 98.2%. Port Authority Bus Terminal's performance increased as well from 90.1% to 93.5% of buses departing on time. While Durand Transportation Center increased from 95.2% to 97.8%. North Penn Station on-time performance improved from 94.6% to 98.8%. And Atlantic City on-time performance held steady at 99.1% of buses departing on time. Bus equipment reliability, measured as overall miles between in-service delays, increased from 14,917 miles in February to 15,078 miles in March. Between July 2019 and March 2020, bus equipment reliability improved dramatically from 9,434 miles to 15,078 miles, a 37% improvement in 8 months. Light rail Overall on-time performance was 97.1% in March 2020, just shy of our 97.3% goal and a 1.3 percentage point year-over-year increase. The 12-month rolling average on-time performance for all three light rail lines increased by 0.4 of a percentage point year-over-year to 97.02%. Hudson Bergen Light Rail on-time performance increased to 98.4% in March. Door malfunction issues caused delays on March 5th, 9th, 20th, and 24th. These light rail vehicles were corrected and are swapped out immediately. Trains were also affected by an auto blocking the tracks on March 2nd, police activity on March 4th, 10th, and 18th, an obstruction to an overhead power pantograph on March 13th, and a signal failure at 8th Street Terminal in Bayonne on March 16th. Newark Light Rail on-time performance slightly decreased to 97.9% in March. Trains were affected by mechanical faults on March 2nd, propulsion fault on March 3rd and March 11th, switch issues on March 5th and 9th, a brake fault on March 16th, and manpower shortage on March 24th. Riverline on-time performance slightly decreased to 95% in March. Trip delays resulted from door issues and engine faults on March 4th, 14th, 18th, and 22nd, police activity on March 2nd, 8th, 24th, and 26th, a motor vehicle blocking the tracks on March 21st, a downed utility pole and wires caused by a motor vehicle crash near 36th Street Station on March 15th, a parent-child separation on March 20th, and a customer in need of medical attention on March 23rd. Light rail equipment reliability, measured as mean distance between failure, continues to remain relatively static for North Light Rail when compared to the previous month. Hudson Bergen Light Rail equipment reliability continued to increase for the 11th consecutive month, with a notable increase from 29,475 miles in February to 32,341 miles in March. Riverline equipment reliability increased for the 5th consecutive month in March, with a notable increase from 8,925 miles in February to 11,050 miles in March. Access Link on-time performance was 92.3% for March 2020. A year-over-year increase of 4.1 percentage points. The 12-month average for Access Link on-time performance was 89.6%, a year-over-year decrease of 0.7 of a percentage point. Both exceed the 89% statewide goal based on current on-time performance thresholds for each of the regions served by Access Link. Trip count was 91,861 for March, a year-over-year decrease of 42,645. Total number of cases for March was 193, a year-over-year decrease of 182. Cases were split 28% for the NJT Operations Center and 72% for the region. The top three customer concerns were service delays, NJT employee performance, and regional employee performance. All complaints regarding employee performance are fully investigated and action is taken when warranted. The Operations Center has expanded training to include sensitivity training refresher courses. There were 104 service delay inquiries for March, a year-over-year decrease of 109. The majority of service delay complaints were reported in Region 5, Essex, Morris, Somerset, and Union counties, and service delay complaints are being addressed in several ways, including ongoing software upgrades that include faster vehicle location and improved scheduling function, addition of runs during peak hours, increased hiring, improved service control training, and better service monitoring tools. Access Link is working with IT on upgrading software to include Trapeze Viewpoint, a cloud and web-based business intelligence solution that will provide access to real-time and historical information, improving reporting and decision-making capabilities by providing visualization of key service metrics in customizable multifunctional dashboards. For customer service, transit information centers, average speed of answer in March was 11 seconds, falling short of the goal of 5 seconds, and representatives answered 98% of calls in March, just shy of meeting the goal of 99%. New Jersey Transit received 209 commendations in March, and I'll share a few. An Access Link customer wrote in to commend service monitor Keisha for accommodating her when her sister became ill. She was the primary caregiver for her sister and needed to get to her as soon as possible. Keisha helped her do that and arranged for her to get back home as well. A bus customer wrote in to let us know he needed to get to an interview in Parsippany by 7 a.m., leaving from Newark. Shirley Bryce was perfect, patient, and knowledgeable. She explained the route, the cost, the travel time, and assured the customer the walking path from the bus stop to his destination was safe. And a rail customer contacted us today. Train 3860 consistently has the best quiet car on the NEC. You must walk into this car indirectly through an adjacent car and must pass under a large sign which identifies the car as quiet. The quiet car even has dimmed lights, which keeps the car on point as well. And the customer keeps the car quiet. It is a nice harbor in which to commute. Thank you. In March, social media content was seen over 7.5 million times, which generated more than 197,000 engagements and over 19,700 visits to njtransit.com. On March 11th, Senator Chris Brown tweeted, "Thanks to NJ Transit President and CEO Kevin Corbett, working together in a bipartisan manner, we've improved and added service on the AC rail line to help our local families and businesses." On March 9th, New Jersey Transit celebrated Women's History Month by honoring trailblazers who advanced transportation, including our very own Lenore Isaac, Senior Director of Resilience Program in the NJ Transit Capital Programs and Projects Group. New Jersey Transit also promoted the College Student Pass Program and the Expanded Commuter Benefits Program, signed into law last year by Governor Murphy. It requires New Jersey employers of at least 20 employees to offer a pre-tax transportation fringe benefit and took effect on March 1st. At the 9th Annual Leading Infrastructure Award Program, the New Jersey Alliance for Action recognized three New Jersey Transit project teams. The $195 million Long Slip Fill and Rail Enhancement Project, led by project manager James Lutz, will remove an entry point for the type of flooding that inundated Hoboken during Superstorm Sandy and enable construction of new high-level platforms at Hoboken Terminal. The $232 million Mason Substation Project, led by project manager Pramala Raj in partnership with PSC&G, will strengthen power resiliency to restore service faster following extreme weather. And the $71 million reconstruction of Elizabeth Station, led by project manager Eduardo Blanco, will enable it to accommodate up to 12 car trains with high-level ADA accessible platforms, along with a new station building and customer amenities. On March 5th, Amtrak and New Jersey Transit issued a joint statement after the U.S. Department of Transportation published its environmental assessment for replacement of the Sawtooth Bridges. And I'll read the statement. Amtrak and New Jersey Transit applaud the U.S. DOT for publishing the environmental assessment for replacement of the Sawtooth Bridges. The Sawtooth Bridges carry the Northeast Corridor over PATH and Conrail PATH, as well as New Jersey Transit's busy Morris and Essex lines to Hoboken. These critical spans were built in 1907 and are in urgent need of replacement and expansion, which will increase reliability and ultimately assist in eliminating a major bottleneck in the busiest section of the Northeast Corridor. We appreciate the ongoing support of our elected leaders and look forward to continuing our work with USDOT and all stakeholders to move this important project forward. On March 4th, New Jersey Transit President and CEO Kevin Corbett testified in Washington, D.C. before the House Transportation and Infrastructure Railroads, Pipelines, and Hazardous Materials Subcommittee hearing on funding a robust freight and passenger rail network, advocating for New Jersey's critical rail transportation needs. And on March 11th, the New Jersey Transit Board of Directors approved the purchase of 25 additional 60-foot articulated buses funded by a recent grant award from the Federal Transit Administration. On March 3rd, Governor Murphy, New Jersey Transit President and CEO Kevin Corbett, and state, county, local, and labor officials, including Assemblyman Raj Mukherjee, Hudson County Executive Tom DeGeese, and Jersey City Mayor Stephen Fulop, marked the early construction work underway on the Hudsonburg and Light Rail Route 440 extension in Jersey City. In March, the New Jersey Transit Police Department promoted Officer Brianne Gold to the rank of sergeant. Officer Gold scored the highest among candidates during the promotion exam. And in response to the COVID-19 pandemic, New Jersey Transit submitted a request for federal assistance to help offset the significant loss of fare revenues and the significant and escalating costs associated with COVID-19 response, including enhanced cleaning and disinfection protocols at stations, employee work locations, and onboard vehicles. New Jersey Transit will receive $1.44 billion through the CARES Act and will soon be submitting an additional request for further assistance. To keep customers and employees informed on COVID-19 response, New Jersey Transit shared daily updates about ongoing efforts to sanitize stations and equipment, as well as service changes designed to enable safe physical distancing, prevent the spread of infection, and flatten the curve while supporting those traveling for location-essential jobs. NJTPD outreach officers also provided assistance to the at-risk and unhoused communities as part of New Jersey Transit's ongoing response to the COVID-19 pandemic. And that concludes the operations and customer service report for March.
Thank you, Stuart. I will now ask board members for questions or comments. Board Member Fulton.
Good morning. Well, first I'll start off by extending my thanks and encouragement to to everyone for keeping service moving during this very, very difficult time. It's quite admirable. The numbers reflect it. Couple quick questions. How many days of March were we working with a modified schedule?
Schedule changes. I'll ask Mike, and I think Charlie's on for rail and Ron for a light rail. They want to add specifics. But the service changes began in late March, the last week of March, and then really the first week of April. That's where we saw service modifications, schedule changes.
Okay. So I guess the question I was asking were these statistics are reflective of a fairly normal month for most of March.
In terms of scheduled service, yes. I think what we saw as the month went on is that ridership began to decline.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Cedric, this is Mike Kilcoyne. I would add that while some of the official service changes may have been triggered mid-late March, the realities of travel were evident earlier in March. So, you know, traffic had reduced pretty significantly. Customer loads had begun to plummet already. So some of the on-time performance things that we're looking at and that kind of thing were already being affected by lighter traffic and lower passenger counts. And some of our efforts were driven in part by an increased number of our employees going out on quarantine and positive results by mid-late March. So we had started to feel the effects of it, and our official schedule changes, you know, ultimately were triggered by those things.
This is Bill Vaccaro. You'll see more of the specifics in the financial report. We'll do at 10 o'clock on the daily declines that started the middle of the month.
Okay. Yeah, I was trying to get my head around how to understand the sensitivity of the metrics given the incredible number of changes that you guys are managing on a day-to-day basis. I'm sure it's showing up in the finances in April will probably be more reflective of some of the challenges that you're going through. To that point, and this is more of a real-time question, but I think it's tied to a conversation we could have next month, if not now. So crowding buses as a result of trying to maintain social distance, or to say it another way, keeping people apart, so therefore having buses that are less than full. How do we react to that quickly? I'll ask the more direct question: if a particular route is crowded in the morning, how long would it take for us to recognize it and implement a solution?
One day,
okay.
So I'll give you, for instance, in our 94 route, or one route, either one, had experienced due to some specifics. HelloFresh is a factory on the one line that was experiencing crowding. And the 94 line is well-ridden. We have operators calling into the control center each day when they reach 30 customers, which is about half of a busload. So we have instant tracking on any of those routes that are starting to see heavier lines. So we add service to that line and in some cases go back to a full weekday schedule to make sure that we try and stay under that number. Right now we're getting about a half a dozen of those calls in the morning and probably, I'm going to say 15 or 20 buses throughout the day that have 30 customers on them out of the 12,000 trips that we run. And we react daily to those numbers as they get called in.
Okay, Mike, so we work together long enough. So, you know, my next question is when you do the math, right, and you start to unwind this and people start coming back, at some point you run out of buses.
Yes, sir.
Right. And Cedric, it's Kevin. And I'll let Mike get a bit in the weeds, but just from the sort of the 30,000-foot view, this is an issue that, Matt Foy and I have been, you know, we're communicating multiple times a week, but we've formally set something up now, looking at how we revamp up. The various governor's offices we're doing, you know, for George Helmy has me, you know, with New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, et cetera. That's one effort. But just practically speaking, particularly as you know, the North Jersey market, the New York metropolitan market, both Port Authority bus terminal as well as, you know, rail into Manhattan. Bus is really going to be the pressure point, as you can imagine, because, you know, rail cars that are 5 or 10% full, you can double or even triple, and you're still well within the 50%, you know, the Executive Order 125. But buses, as you can appreciate, is going to be the issue. And within APTA as well, we're all talking about that. Fare collection, what does that do with our fare box? You know, you'll be hearing from Bill in a second. But that is really the trip of right. Yeah, so that is going to be, as we start ramping up, that's one of the biggest issues is really going to be how do we deal with that, the bus situation. But I would say, Mike, you may want to go into some details, you know, how nimble we've become and how we've had to learn to adapt quickly. I think you see that our daily cleaning of rail car and buses, that is now the MTA is coming around to, you know, our daily, our numbers, I think, of people who are out because of COVID, much less fatalities of our employees attributable to COVID is, well below average of percentage-wise of other transit properties and below the state average. But, you know, even with all that said, as we start getting people ramping back up, that's going to be a real trick. And Mike, one example you may want to give, though, is like with that Fresh Direct, how we really have become nimble, where we even know the major employers on certain routes, and if their shift changes an hour, they let the shift out earlier. You know, that's a good example, Mike, of how you dealt with that one.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, Cedric, this is whack-a-mole. I mean, the real key is to try and make sure, and we've been successful, that the same trips and the same time frames on the same lines don't get repeated crowdings, and we've been successful in doing that. One of the things that came out of nowhere was HelloFresh, which is a factory over here down Neck in the Ironbound. Occasionally, when their work is done, they let their shift out. And you know, we've had discussions with them about shift changes. We know they were there. One of the reasons our service is designed the way it is on the one line is to serve those shift changes. And then lo and behold, their 5 o'clock let out 3 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, out of nowhere, we had a 354 bus out of HelloFresh, had 54 customers on it out of nowhere. So going forward, you know, we called them the next day to figure out where that came from. They said, well, when we're done early, we let them out early, but we typically provide a shuttle to Penn Station. Well, you know, people wanted to wait for the bus. So from now on, just to make a long story short, we put an articulated bus on that particular run, which pulls out at 8 o'clock at night. And it runs with an artic all night so that when it runs through HelloFresh on the two or three times it does that, it has a much larger bus for that capacity. Should they let their shift out early, we'll be able to accommodate by and large that number of customers that come out unexpectedly. So we remain agile, and we'll remain agile until we can't. And we're starting to see customers return. We're starting to see a lot more local ridership. New York, as you know, is still very suppressed. But the local ridership is really starting to show itself. And, you know, as you know, we were constrained prior to COVID. And, you know, we're looking at next week our electronics come back because of how agile we're being and shifting service to accommodate the riders, which is mission one. Our technology hasn't been able to keep up with the distribution so that you can get real-time passenger counts on our automatic passenger counting system. So next week, that comes back online. We will be able to tell much better where the lightest ridership is so that we can begin to reapply some of that equipment from the lighter markets to the heavier markets and survive as long as we can while the ridership begins to reassert itself. And then we have to come up with some innovative solutions on how we continue to keep the heavier schedules keeping up with the social distancing needs.
Understood. Very, very challenging. And I applaud you guys for your nimbleness and your thoughtfulness. But just for clarity, so if a bus pulls up and it meets the 50%, the rest of the people staying there are going to wait for the next bus. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And, the challenge that we're encountering now is that drivers don't, you know, drivers don't want to leave people behind. So occasionally, you know, you're going to pull up to HelloFresh and it's 4 o'clock in the morning. You're as a human being, you're going to want to try and get everybody out of there and not strand them. So, you know, we have an occasional circumstance where, you know, drivers are loath to pass up customers, and we'll occasionally see a bus with too many people on it, and we'll reach out to the driver and remind them that, you know, in spite of their compassion, they need to call the control center, let them know they had to start bypassing, and, you know, we'll do what we can to get another piece of equipment out there to accommodate if the headway is too wide.
Thank you. I appreciate the challenge, and I appreciate everything everyone's doing. So that's the end of my question.
Thank you. Board Member Gordon, any questions or comments?
Yes, thank you. And I'm always a little frustrated because Cedric raises some of the issues that I want to talk about. First of all, I want to echo his comments to staff for the Herculean effort that's underway in the organization, and very impressed with the response and how well you're doing under great pressure. I would just also echo Cedric's comment about the significance of the data that we're hearing at a time that none of us has experienced before. When you have passenger counts down 90%, you know, I don't know how much guidance you can take from on time data. So I think I would find it more helpful, rather than getting into the number of decimal points, but just understand some of the broader trends during this time. When are we starting to see volume coming back, and where, and if there are any messages we can take from that. And that's all I'll say at this point. Thanks.
Thank you. Board Member Rasmussen, any questions or comments?
No questions, no comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Caulfield, any questions or comments?
Yeah, just one quick question, and echo all the other board member comments on the efforts being undertaken to address this unprecedented situation. There was reference, I think, Stuart, you had referenced Access Link seeing an uptick in some delay complaints in Region 5. When was that, I guess, earlier in March prior to the decrease in ridership, or was that, were you seeing those delays at when the ridership had been lower and after some of the COVID shutdowns?
Generally earlier, I think earlier before the ridership began to decline.
Okay. And is Region 5, is that I don't think I'd seen that trend in previous board meetings. Do you normally see Region 5 as the highest number of complaints on that end?
Good morning. This is Michelle Styler, the acting GM of Access Link.
Yep.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know, Region 5 is our largest region.
Yep.
And I wouldn't say that there was necessarily an uptick. They tend to lead the five regions in complaints only because they're the larger of the regions.
Okay.
So there really isn't much of a difference. The on-time performance challenge is because of operator shortages, the urban area congestion, and that spilled over into the beginning of March.
Okay. Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Board members, at this time, we will go back to the public comment period. There is 2 minutes per speaker. I will now ask Joseph Cliff to provide his comments.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, I can hear you, Joe. Can you hear
me?
Okay,
thank you. Yes.
Okay.
Good morning. I first wanted to say I'm really sorry to hear of Ray Kenney's passing. I knew him at the Long Island Railroad, and he basically came out of retirement to go to work for New Jersey Transit, and I would imagine the commute between New Jersey and Lindenhurst, Long Island, is probably what gave him the virus and killed him. I just wanted to say a word of regret on his passing. I just wanted to mention, I went online to the board section of the Jersey Transit website. I downloaded the operations, customer service operations and administration committee agendas, and I went through them early this morning only to realize that they were from last month. They are not changed to today. So I'm operating at a disadvantage. Everything I saw was February. What I would say is that I feel like, to some extent, everybody's looking backwards. It's like you're on the Titanic, you've hit the iceberg, and you're looking backwards about what happened. And I would think you would be looking forwards. I did not hear anything about actual quantitative numbers on first-line operators, on the railroad, conductors and engineers, bus drivers, what percentage were out and why. I didn't hear anything about canceled trains. It's been a huge problem. When you go to hourly service and you cancel a train, it's a real problem. You're losing riders because of that. But I did not hear anything about that. I may have missed it. But I feel like you're looking backwards. You need to look forwards. What's planned in the future? When are you going to come back to 100% service on your reduced schedule? And things like that. And what else? Oh, hiring. Now, this is last month. Maybe it's changed this month because they didn't look at this month. But everyone else in the world of transit has a hiring freeze. They've also put a 60-day or more hold on capital expenditures that are not yet approved. I don't get that sense from New Jersey Transit. Have you stopped hiring? Have you put a hold on any capital program projects going out? You're looking at a very disastrous financial situation, and I think that it makes sense to plan ahead. And lastly, I wonder if any of the board members have seen from New Jersey Transit New York Governor Cuomo's statement on Sunday that they had finished the Canarsie Tunnel project. They completely rehabilitated the tunnel in 12 months without ever shutting down peak service. That is guidance for the Hudson tunnels. The plan to spend $10 billion to build new tunnels before you build old ones should be dead. I mean, put a stake through the heart of that, because for a few hundred million dollars, those tunnels can be brought to 100% reliability following the lead of New York. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Cliff, we did check the website, and the correct agendas are posted. So if you could please check that again. Next is the cost of service update, Jeff Bernstein.
Thank you, and good morning. This slide presents key performance indicators related to our cost of service. Just as a note, as was mentioned earlier by Bovacara, there will be a much more detailed financial presentation during the Open Administration Committee at 10 a.m., which will give some significant context about what has been going on from a revenue and ridership perspective and how that impacts these numbers. But to the slide and to the report, in March, across all modes and on an average per passenger basis, we recognized revenues of approximately $3.83 on costs of $13.79 for a recovery ratio of 27.8%. Per passenger subsidies of between $5.44 and $9.60 were required for bus, rail, and light rail service, with fare box recovery ratios of 34%, 36%, and 16% respectively. Access links recovery ratio was 4.4%. Thank you. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Jeff. Board Member Fulton, any questions or comments?
But no questions at this time.
Board Member Gordon, any questions or comments?
None for me, thanks.
Board Member Rasmussen, any questions or comments?
No questions, no comments, thank you.
Board Member Caulfield?
Nope, I'm good. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Board members, that concludes the agenda for the Operations and Customer Service Committee. The Administration Committee meeting will begin at 10 a.m. Thank you.